Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
And we are delighted to welcome our guest on this episode, best-selling poet and author Maggie Smith. Her poems and essays have appeared in the New York Times, the New Yorker, the Paris Review, the Washington Post, and the Guardian, in addition to many other publications.
Back in 2016, Maggie's poem, Good Bones, went viral internationally and has been shared countless times since by those of us who struggle to keep the realities of life's ugliness from children. Last year, her book, Keep Moving, Notes on Loss, Creativity, and Change, became a breakout bestseller in the midst of the pandemic. Maggie, we thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And we want to congratulate you on your latest book of poems called Goldenrod. Tell us about it.
Thank you. Yeah, so Goldenrod is the culmination of several years of work. I started these poems right after I finished my last book of poems, Good Bones, so back in 2015. And then the newest poems in this new book are from they're from the pandemic. They're from 2020. So it's, you know, 5 or 6 years of writing one poem at a time. And then at the end, you kind of pull them all together and print them out and see what you've been doing all those years that maybe you didn't know you were doing. So I've been joking that the sort of secret invisible ink title of this book is really Be Still, which is the opposite of my last book, Keep Moving.
Interesting. What inspired the title Goldenrod?
Yeah, so there's a poem in the book called Goldenrod, and usually I pull the title of a book of poems from either a poem title or a phrase in one of the poems, and I usually go through and try to figure out which titles would be representative of the collection. So there's a title, there's a poem in the book called Walking the Dog, but Walking the Dog would not be a good title for the, you know, the whole book, because that's not really what the book is about. So Goldenrod felt like a good metaphorical choice to me. It's a plant that sort of mistaken for a weed, but it's beautiful. So it's a little bit about perception and the way we see things. And the scientific name Solidago means to make whole or to heal. And so many of these poems, and really so much of the living that went into making these poems over the last several years, had to do with growth and healing.
Yeah, I know it features poems about parenthood and solitude and love, memory, and goldenrods, as you mentioned. What do you hope your readers get from the new book?
You know, I go to poems to be changed. That's really what I go to poems for. And sometimes I find comfort in poems. Sometimes I'm cheered up by poems. Sometimes I find poems that are sad in the same way I feel sad. And so, like, listening to a sad song when you feel sad, it kind of helps you kind of wallow a little bit when you need to. But really, I go to them to be changed. I go to poems to see things in a new way. And so I'm hoping that what readers take from this book is maybe slowing down a little bit and paying attention to the sort of beauty in the everyday. And I'm hoping that they'll see in my poems that draw from my daily life, some images and experiences that will feel familiar to them, like, oh yeah, I've done that. Or, oh yeah, I've noticed that. And sort of seeing themselves reflected in a poem, I think, makes us feel less alone.
I know that you say that poetry distracts us from busyness. So many of us felt like we weren't busy. So how were you able to find that inspiration?
Well, I went through, I had kids throughout the entire time I wrote these poems. And so I've always had to kind of find little scraps of time here and there and be willing to consider inspiration in unlikely places, like autocorrect or a conversation I overheard between my kids or, you know, playing in the backyard. And if I wait for sort of divine inspiration, I'm going to be waiting a long time because life is busy.
Right.
So I found that I can make poems, you know, in little scraps of time just by writing little things down. And hopefully then after they go to bed, I can get a little bit more open space and have time to kind of flesh those things out. And the pandemic was really no different in that way for me. I just had my kids at home a lot more, you know, Zooming school, but it was still basically what my life looks like mostly, which is parenting and writing.
Do you think the pandemic has encouraged interest in poetry because perhaps it's made us look for comfort and answers in places that we didn't explore before?
I hope so. I mean, I do think there are some positives that have come out of this really hard year plus. And I guess what I hope is that one of those things is paying attention and spending time. I mean, my son, who's 8, said that one of the best things about COVID time, as he calls it, is family time, you know, getting more time with us. And so I think, you know, if we think about that and we think about what we can do with our days, paying attention is one of those things. And I think poetry is a good place to go for that.
Do you feel hopeful about the future, even though your poems in this book really focus on being present? And is that something you think we need to worry about? Or are you just really thinking right now we do need to live in the present, which I think is a very, very accurate thing?
I mean, I worry in the present. It's the present moment isn't perfect. I mean, as much as I try to stay in it, the present moment isn't a perfect shining moment. The present moment is whatever it happens to be for us. And sometimes that's a painful moment or a moment of reflection or questioning. So as much as I try to stay present, I think what I really am working through in this book are the big questions. Like how do I know what I know? How do I feel? How do I explain this world to my kids? What's next? And also, what came before? How do I make sense of all the stuff that happened way back there? And that's really what I'm trying to do in these poems. I find questions to be really the ultimate inspiration. You know, there's so many things we wonder about, and instead of kind of shoving those wondering questions away in the midst of our busy day, if we really take some time, whether we're poets or not, take some time to reflect on those things.
Our Nobody Told Me conversation continues in just a minute after we tell you about our sponsor, Air Medcare Network.
If a medical emergency arises, are you prepared? Air Medcare Network provides world-class air transport services to the nearest appropriate hospital or trauma center.
AMCN members have the added value of knowing their flight expenses are completely covered when flown by an AMCN provider.
We've mentioned Air Medcare Network on this podcast before, but we may not have highlighted how affordable this membership is. For as little as $85 a year, it covers your entire household every day, 24/7, even when you're traveling.
AMCN is the largest medical air transport membership in the country, covering 38 states. For just pennies a day, you can worry less about what matters most.
This is security no family should be without. Now, as a Nobody Told Me listener, you'll get up to a $50 e-gift card when you join.
Simply visit airmedcarenetwork.com/nobody and use offer code NOBODY.
Again, that's airmedcarenetwork.com/nobody and use offer code NOBODY.
I mentioned that last year, your book, Keep Moving, Notes on Loss, Creativity, and Change, became a breakout bestseller in the midst of the pandemic. And I'm wondering, why do you think it touched such a nerve?
I wrote Keep Moving in the hardest year of my life, personally. And then it was released into the world during a year that was incredibly difficult for all of us, you know, collectively. And so it seemed to be, in some ways, kind of perfect timing, because the message really of the book is one of resilience and transformation, that even when things in our lives don't turn out the way we thought they were going to, that doesn't mean the story's over. It just means we have to learn how to revise it and keep moving through it and, you know, let go of our expectations and accept what we have and accept what we can still do and make possible. You know, it's about possibility. And I think in the pandemic, we all needed that. We all needed a little shot of hope and a little shot of remembering that even though a lot of our lives were kind of shut down for a long period of time, and a lot of our lives are still shut down, and maybe shut down further in the future, that there's still a lot of hope and a lot of possibility out there for us.
I'm somebody who would love to write poetry like you and touch a nerve like that, but gosh, I can't figure it out at all. And I'm always judging myself. I know you've said that that's not the point, that the point is self-expression. And I'm wondering how you were able to get over that hump of writing for other people and really writing for yourself, and how that ended up launching a successful career.
Well, I think the key is, when you're working on a piece of writing, not to think about where it's going to go or who else is going to see it. Because if we sit down to write something or paint something or make anything, and what we have in mind is all the different hands or eyes that might be on that thing, it can be kind of stifling. And we might just get so nervous about the outcome, and will they like it, and will they get it, that we might not make anything at all. And so the key for me, really from the very beginning and still to this day, when I was a teenager and now in my 40s, is when I'm writing something, I try not to think too much about where it's headed or who might see it. Like if I'd thought about how many people would read Good Bones when I was, you know, jotting it down in a coffee shop, I probably never would have finished it, because it never would have been quote unquote ready for that many people to read. And so not censoring ourselves and not kind of freaking ourselves out, frankly, by thinking about what might happen when people see this stuff, just making it and enjoying that process, and then getting to a point where you feel like it's done and ready, then deciding what you want to do with it. And if you never send it out, you made that thing for you, and that is worth it too.
Tell us more about the story behind Good Bones, which, as we mentioned, went viral. And I couldn't believe when I read that it had been rejected.
Oh, all poems are rejected. That's part of being a poet. Whenever I finish poems, I send them out to magazines, usually in a batch of, you know, 4, 5, or 6, and they travel together. And if I'm lucky, the first editor I send them to wants 1 or 2 or 3, or maybe all of them. But if I'm realistic, you know, regardless of how long I've been doing this, I still get rejections. I still send poems out to magazines, and sometimes it's just not that editor's cup of tea, or it doesn't really work with the other stuff they've already chosen for that issue. And part of maturing in the art is not taking that personally, and not letting that stop you from sending those things back out or making anything else afterwards. So yeah, when I sent Good Bones out in a batch of poems in 2015, when I wrote the poem, the first couple of responses I got were no's. And I sent it to an upstart journal called Waxwing that it was relatively new back then. And they wanted 3 of the poems, including Good Bones. And when the poem was published online the following summer, June of 2016, it went viral because of the timing, because that week was the same week of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando and the murder of Joe Cox, Member of Parliament in England, the same week. And if one of those literary magazines, say a print journal that goes to subscribers, had accepted that poem in the fall or summer, whenever it was, of 2015, that never would have happened. And so actually those early rejections set those poems on a path that made it possible for it to reach many, many more people than it would have otherwise.
We would be so honored if you would read Good Bones for us.
Oh, of course, I'd be happy to. Good Bones. Life is short, though I keep this from my children. Life is short, and I've shortened mine in 1,000 delicious, ill-advised ways. 1,000 deliciously ill-advised ways I'll keep from my children. The world is at least 50% terrible, and that's a conservative estimate, though I keep this from my children. For every bird, there is a stone thrown at a bird. For every loved child, a child broken, bagged, sunk in a lake. Life is short, and the world is at least half terrible. And for every kind stranger, there is one who would break you, though I keep this from my children, I am trying to sell them the world. Any decent realtor walking you through a real shithole chirps on about good bones. This place could be beautiful, right? You could make this place beautiful.
That just resonates with me. Yeah, it does. And especially as a parent. And I'm wondering why you think we turn to poetry, why as a society we turn to poetry and we all relate to something like good bones after a catastrophe.
I mean, what I've heard from people, over the years is that it articulates something that they felt was sort of true in themselves. I think that's that resonating feeling, but hadn't been able to put into words themselves. And I know I turn to poems for that too. Sometimes, you know, my business is words and I can't always describe. I don't always have the words for how I'm feeling or what I'm experiencing, but I can often find a poem that does that for me. And so I think we turn to poems because they, in their magic, which is sometimes inexplicable, tell us what we already know to be true and do so in a way that we might not have done on our own, but it kind of clicks with us in the moment. We get that kind of aha click in a poem. And I think that's maybe what Good Bones has been to some people, a little light in the darkness, even while it acknowledges that the darkness exists.
Yeah, there is that kind of physical reaction. I mean, when Laura said it gives you chills, you do kind of get that a physical reaction when you read a good poem, when it really touches you.
I love that. I mean, I Emily Dickinson, I'll flub the quote, but Emily Dickinson said, when the top of my head, I feel that the top of my head has been taken off. That is poetry. That's when I know that I've read a poem. And so what you're really going for as a poet is to have somebody kind of gasp or or sigh or get goosebumps or just sort of sit quietly with it for a moment because it struck them. I'm in a deep place where maybe they haven't accessed that deep place in a while, and somehow the poem was able to winnow its way through and get there.
Yeah, and what I took away from the poem is you have good people, you have bad people, life is short, life is long, and it made me really feel like we're all just complicating life, and it really boils down to that simplicity. What do you think?
Well, it's hard for me to summarize a poem because I feel like the poem is the poem says what it means.
Right.
In my mind, the poem is sort of saying the world is not a perfect place. There's a lot wrong, but also there's a lot possible. And we have the ability, and not only the ability, but the responsibility to make it as good a place as it can be, whatever that means to us. You know, when you walk into a house and the wallpaper is terrible and the carpet needs torn up and everything is in sort of shambles, but you're like, oh, this is cosmetic, right? The house mm-hmm. has good bones. It's mm-hmm. structurally sound. It's just that we have a lot of work to do and we need to roll up our sleeves and do it. And as a parent, I often feel that way about the world and about this country with my kids. Like there are so many good things, but we also have to roll up our sleeves and do some hard work to fix the things that are not working for us.
And you can choose to do whatever you want with those good bones, because you could tear down the house or you could make it really beautiful.
Yeah, it's up to us. I mean, you're right. There's a sense of agency there, right? I mean, it's your house. What do you want to do with it? How do you want to live your life?
Do you have a favorite poem from Goldenrod? And I know that may be like asking what your favorite child is or who your favorite child is.
I was going to say that. It's exactly like that. It's asking about a favorite child. I don't have a favorite poem, but I would be happy to read one. And maybe I'll read one that kind of reminds me of my kids and the walks we take. So this is a poem called Poem Beginning with a Retweet. And literally it was born on Twitter. I read a tweet that said, if you drive past horses and don't say horses, you're a psychopath. And I thought, what a great tweet. It's not technically what a psychopath is. It's slang usage. But I like the idea that when you see something and you notice something, you call it out. Mm-hmm. And when you're the mother of small children, you're very used to yelling airplane or train in the car, to the point where sometimes you might yell train in the car by yourself without your children being in the car. You know what I mean?
That's true. Yeah, I think I've learned that from my mom.
Yeah.
So this poem was born from that. It's called Poem Beginning with a Retweet. If you drive past horses and don't say horses, you're a psychopath. If you see an airplane but don't point it out, a rainbow, a cardinal, a butterfly, if you don't whisper, shout, albino squirrel, deer, red fox, if you hear a woodpecker and don't shush everyone around you into silence, if you find an unbroken sand dollar in a tide pool, if you see a dorsal fin breaking the water, if you see the moon and don't say, oh my God, look at the moon, if you smell smoke and don't search for fire, if you feel yourself receding, and don't tell anyone until you're gone. So that one is really about, it sort of gets at the heart of, I think, something in this book, which is about really paying attention and noticing and not breezing by things the way that we so often do, either because we're scrolling our phones while on a walk or we're trying to multitask. I think this book of poems sort of celebrates single-tasking, if that's a term, or monotasking, which is not, you know, getting away from being so busy that we can't pay attention to the beautiful things around us.
Absolutely. And what do you think that a really deep understanding of poetry and really reading each poem, reading each page and sitting with it, how can that impact our life in a positive way if, say, we are just really busy?
Well, I think it's like meditation or like sitting and listening to music.
That's what I was going to say. Exactly. Yeah. What I was going to say.
It's like that. It's like taking time out to appreciate something beautiful, I think, changes our brains. It lowers our pulse. It makes us feel kind of still and calm inside. And so, you know, one of my nighttime habits is reading poems before bed instead of scrolling my phone, because I do feel calmer and sort of more reflective and better prepped for sleep after I've read a poem than I do if I'm reading the news, you know? And just taking time out of a day to read a poem or take a walk or put on a record or, you know, just read a book, something. I think it is helpful. We are all so incredibly busy and pulled in so many directions, both personally and professionally. And, you know, during the pandemic, being home more didn't really change the amount of busy that we were. It just made us all busy together in the same crowded space. And so being able to make a little headspace with a poem, I find that really useful.
Do you still write a note to yourself and encouragement every day?
I don't. I haven't done that since Keep Moving, but sometimes I return to those notes. You know, if I'm having a tough day, it will suddenly occur to me, wait, Maggie, you've been here. You felt like this before. You felt this anxious, or you felt down, or you felt insecure. And you had a project that you worked on throughout this time. Maybe you should go back to that project. So I've been going back to my very dog-eared reading copy of Keep Moving from Book Tour that's all marked up and has flags all over it. And sometimes I just open the book and flip to a page and remind myself of the way that I felt a few years ago and also reflect on how far I've come since then. And I think that's really helpful. Like, wow, I went through a really hard time. I got through it. Even if the hard time I'm going through now is difficult, I know I survived that. And whatever this is, I'll survive this too.
I think that's really interesting. I found with my gratitude journal, I'll look back on years past and remember times in my life that I thought were so bad and that I would never get through. And then I look back and I don't even remember those days. So I think that's really, really powerful. And I love that you do that. You know, at the end of each show, we ask our guests, what is your nobody told me lesson? So what is it that nobody told you about poetry or the deeper meaning behind it or life in general that you wish that they had, because it would have helped you figure out life, if that's even a thing, a little sooner.
No,
I'm guessing figured it out. If you have, we'd love to know.
I have not figured it out. One of the things I would say is that nobody told me that I could make poems from the stuff of my daily life. You know, I think particularly in school, I really thought that poetry was this thing that sort of happened on high, and you really did have to wait for some sort of like divine inspiration, and that you really should be, you know, you can't really write poems about like walking your dog around the block. Like, is that really a poem that anyone's going to want to read? And so one of the things that I think experience has taught me is that the stuff of life is worthy of being the stuff of literature. And I don't have to have my life over here in one pen and then my work over here in another pen drawing from something else. I can merge the two as much as I feel comfortable. And that means writing about my kids and writing about my neighborhood and the house I grew up in and, you know, a dream I had or whatever the case may be, but just allowing myself to be myself fully in my poems. That's something I wish I had known back then, but I think past me would be really delighted to see current me doing it.
Maggie, how can people connect with you on social media and the internet?
Well, you know, there's a Dame Maggie Smith, so I have to put poet at the end of my name and everything. So my website is maggiesmithpoet.com, and on Twitter and Instagram, I'm at Maggie Smith Poet there also. So people can track me down there.
Well, we thank you so very much for joining us. This has been such a delight to talk with you. We love your work, and we just had a fantastic conversation with you. So we thank you for sharing your time.
Well, thank you. Some of my best conversations are with my own daughter. So this has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Well, we obviously echo that feeling. Congratulations on all of the success.
Again, our thanks to Maggie Smith. Her latest book of poetry is called Goldenrod. And again, her website is maggiesmithpoet.com. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.
You've always had what it takes to make it happen, and we know the right tools can make it easier. At Strayer University, we're always thinking about new ways to set you up for success. That's why we give you a brand new laptop when you enroll in a bachelor's program, so you can start off on the right foot and keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Eligibility rules, restrictions, and exclusions apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by Chef.